Hey now, this is Bootstrapped Web, episode number 70. This is the podcast for you, the founder who learns by doing as you bootstrap your business online, just like we are. Today, we're going to look back at MicroConf 2015. Brian and I were in Vegas together for that conference, and we'll just kind of talk about our takeaways and our recap and share with you a little bit about what we learned there and what we took out of it. So, as always, I am Jordan.
And I'm Brian, and man, it feels good to be back. You know, good refreshing break at MicroConf, and we will we'll get right into our new updates as we got back from this trip right after this. Today's episode is sponsored by Less Accounting. So I caught up with the co-founder of Less, Alan Branch. Take a listen. All right, I'm here with Alan Branch. Alan, thanks for joining me here.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. So Less Accounting, you know, I'm curious, why did you call the company Less? What does that mean?
Everyone wants to get back to work, and accounting and bookkeeping is one of those things that everyone dreads doing. And no one has the time for it. And we don't want to build software that takes up time. So obviously less features, spending less time in the application, get back to work, back to billing clients, making money. That was our goal.
Yeah, totally. And I've used Less Accounting before, and I've used other accounting software before. And that's what always frustrated me so much about these other guys is like there's so many features and buttons and forms and pages that you have to like sift through. But you know, what I really liked about your product was the way that you write copy within the product and how like you describe things in totally like non-technical terms, you know, kind of like speaking my language.
Sure. So I think, we write our copy the way we speak to our friends. We didn't invent that concept either. I can't like claim that, but bookkeeping sucks. And every piece of accounting software is terrible, including ours. We can't get rid of how bad doing bank reconciliations is and categorizing expenses. We can't get rid of that. But what we can do is speak friendly to our customers within the app and try our damnedest to be friendly and kind and jovial within the bookkeeping tasks and the speak. And so trying to make things less or more pleasant as opposed to terrible.
Yep. So, you know, you guys have like thousands of customers now. Who are your customers? Who did you design Less Accounting for? How would you describe like your most common customer for Less Accounting?
I would describe them as handsome and smart.
Well, we know that.
Yes, they're the smartest people in the world, and they're the most successful business owners in the world as well. No, we built Less Accounting. We started building it in 2006 or 2007, late six, early seven, something like that. And we built it for ourselves. At the time, we were freelancers. My business partner and I were freelancers. We needed to send a few invoices, send a proposal or two, track some expenses, and then get back to work. And we built it for ourselves. And we continued to add little features here and there, fighting back the major accounting features that QuickBooks has or other accountants or CPAs want, and kind of just staying focused on what the core business owner needs to make sort of spending decisions and hiring decisions.
Yeah, very cool. So what is this autopilot thing I heard about? Sounds interesting.
So as much as, you know, being a software guy, I think software is, the answer to every question. It's what should we do? Build software. But there are things that we cannot automate with software. You know, bank reconciliations and some expense calculation just has to happen by a human. And as your business progresses and you become busier and busier as a business owner or freelancer, you know, you start shifting your focus into sales or marketing and out of bookkeeping. And so we've added basically a service layer on top of Less Accounting. You can still do your books in Less Accounting yourself, DIY, and it's a great piece of software. But now we actually have bookkeepers that will help you on a reoccurring basis doing expense categorization and bank reconciliations. We're not touching people's invoices. That's sort of what I think is at least the fun part of running a business is collecting your invoices. And so we're not doing invoice collection for people, but we're handling all the other tasks that they dread.
Yeah, so you're just handling like the boring stuff, like the exactly. Monthly reconciliations and that kind of stuff.
And then we package it up all beautifully, and we either send it off to your CPA for him to smile and thank you for, or we introduce you to a CPA that we think is a kick ass, and they'll help you file your taxes.
I love it, man. That's awesome. So, Alan, thank you so much. I know our listeners will get a lot out of Less Accounting for sure.
Absolutely, thank you.
All right, so head over to lessaccounting.com. And if you're interested in their new autopilot bookkeeping service, go to lessaccounting.com/autopilot. Be sure to use the coupon code BootstrappedWeb, and that will give you your first month of bookkeeping service for free, or that'll get you 2 months free of the Less Accounting software. So thank you, Alan, and the guys over at Less.
All right, Brian, so we've been back for about a week now. Why don't we catch up on some updates on what we've been up to, what's new, and then let's dive into MicroComp 2015 and our takeaways.
Yeah, so, you know, just kind of catching up on all that work that has kind of piled up after taking a few days off. And I actually stayed in Vegas after MicroComp for an additional 4 days. My wife came out to Vegas on that Wednesday, and then she and I kind of hung around Vegas for a couple of days. We, we kind of acted like tourists for a couple of days. Went to a bunch of restaurants, saw a show. We actually got out to Red Rock Canyon, which was really beautiful, a lot of fun. So that just felt good to take a break, and just so much has been going on work wise. But this week I'm back to the grind, and a lot of big projects and things that I'm sinking into. One thing that I was working on yesterday and today was working on the productized community. So the community forum has been one of the most popular parts of productized, and I've been really happy with it. So up until now, it's been a private Facebook group, and that's what I launched with a couple of months ago. And I knew that at the time when I launched it, using a Facebook group wasn't the ideal solution. I just knew that it was a way to quickly get some kind of private group forum going, makes it easier to launch quickly. And I figured that at some point I would migrate that from Facebook to a dedicated forum. And that's actually what I'm working on now. A couple weeks ago, I ran a poll of everybody who's in that group. You know, would you prefer this to be a Facebook group, or would you prefer a private forum or something else? Vast majority said, yeah, let's go for a private forum. My hesitation with that has been, you know, we have so many conversations and comments and things in the private Facebook group that if we shift over to a forum, I was afraid that all of that would get lost. And then also the user base, like we have like over 100 people now in there kind of interacting on a daily basis. And now it's, I'm afraid that we would get the group split up, or some people would make the jump over and some would not. And then like the community kind of, you know, fizzles out. But actually I found a way, or I had a developer handle migrating all of the comments and all of the posts from a Facebook group into the forum software, which I'm using Discourse forums. And there is actually a way to migrate over about 90% or more of all the comments and threads from Facebook into that, which has been pretty cool. Still kind of doing the final preparations on that before inviting the whole group to switch over. And then one way that I'm going to incentivize people to actually switch over is I'm putting two new pieces of content in the new forum that only members would get access to. It's kind of like early access.
Yeah, that's smart. So there's value in making the switch.
Yeah, so like one thing, I'm going to actually be posting my a recording of my talk from MicroConf. I did an attendee talk at MicroConf, and this is a recording of a rehearsal where I went through the slides and gave the talk.
I was about to say, how'd you get a recording?
So that'll be in there. And then the other thing is, as I've been talking about, I'm planning a new to launch a new business, a totally new focus for the foreseeable future. And I now know what that is, and I've started to make plans for that. And I think on our next podcast next week, we'll get into all the details.
Yeah, can't wait.
And the nitty gritty of what that is. But I'm actually going to be announcing that first to the members in the new forum, and give them a sneak peek at like the early marketing site for that and some other details about it. So yeah, working on that over the next couple of days, and hopefully that'll get done.
Nice. Definitely excited for next week to kind of start talking through the new business, the new product. Yeah, very, very cool. So I'm in the same boat, catching up after MicroConf. And of course, the biggest tech disaster since the beginning of CardHook. When does it happen? It happens on the second morning of MicroConf. Perfect. So I'm like, all right, wake up in the morning, let's have a good day. I think it was the same day I was doing the attendee talks. I'm a little nervous to begin with. Check my phone at like 6 a.m., bunch of emails. Like, of course it would happen then.
I remember you were you came up to me at MicroConf when that was happening.
Yeah, just like, kind of that look in my nervous eye. Like, damn it. But it wasn't too bad. And, you know, one of the things, you know, I've always talked about doing things manually at this early stage, those relationships that you form by doing things manually and talking to people on the phone individually and emailing individually and kind of going above and beyond, it's helpful for sales. It's also really helpful for people forgiving you when you screw up. So, you know, some people were upset, but when I responded, you know, in the same way that I respond to other things and the way a relationship has carried on thus far, you know, just about everybody was forgiving. So that was good. So Vegas has a way of exhausting you. We didn't even party. It was business wall to wall, but it's still exhausting just talking for that long.
It's really exhausting. My voice was shot after the first night, after the reception night. I was afraid that I wouldn't even be able to make it through like the 2 days. But
did you hear Rob on his podcast? Did you hear what he sounded like?
he sounded pretty wiped out.
His voice was just demolished. Yep. So that
was my voice on Monday. Like I really couldn't even talk to people. I was just like nodding, like
Yeah. No, I hear you. I just had no rest whatsoever because Ben, my co-founder, came back to Portland with me after he was in MicroConf also. So we just like went from that to just a hardcore week of nonstop work and like talking through everything. So I'm still tired, but whatever.
Yeah, Ben's a cool guy. It was good to meet him and hang out for a bit.
That was good. That was like a coming out party. It was cool. All right, so right, a little update before we jump into MicroConf. Really, what I've been doing lately is focusing on the next phase of the business. So up until now, things are proven. People want this product. They pay for it. They continue to pay for it. They want value. I mean, it's far from done. There are so many features and capabilities and all this other things, but the important parts are proven. And so now, you know, I talked a lot about the outbound sales that we did and how that just got us in touch with so many people, some good, some bad. And we learn from all of it. Who's the right type of prospect? What characteristics do they have? Who do we want to deal with? Who do we not want to deal with? So now we're taking all of that and we're starting to make the turn. Okay, now let's start marketing. Now let's redo the marketing site using everything we've learned so that we position everything properly to the right people. Let's start creating content for the right type of person now that we know who that person is. So we're just kind of making that turn. And that's what I see as the month of May. Redo the marketing site, start creating the content, start making partnerships, start approaching the right people, and all oriented toward the right segment of the market.
Yeah. So it's almost like if the first year is about validating and then clawing your way up to the very first, you know, batch of customers and get revenue up a little bit. Now it's about how do we be really strategic about this and get into positioning, which, you know, there was a lot of talk about that at MicroConf.
That's right.
And really get everything kind of dialed in.
Yeah. And that's it. And we'll talk about that in a few minutes when we get into Rob's talk at MicroConf about positioning. In general, I found myself getting a lot of value out of what I normally see as fluffy in terms of positioning and target market and copy and all these things that sound more fluffy, but then all of a sudden make a really, really big difference.
It's an interesting thing. I mean, I've had the same outlook on that when it comes to like content and even doing things like customer interviews and research. I think the more that I embedded myself in that whole process, the more like solid that I see that as the strategy. And like especially today, when you look at things like SEO, which these days SEO is, I don't want to say SEO is dead. I mean, but to do SEO today is really about doing content really, really well.
Right.
And then SEO is kind of like the side benefit that comes along with that.
Right. That's what happens naturally. It's almost like Google is getting to where they intended to be, where you can kind of ignore optimizing for SEO, you can just do good stuff and the SEO kind of works out. Like our whole SEO strategy is like doing guest posts and podcasting.
Yeah.
Because then people link to you and it's higher quality links and all that. It's like, okay, get all the meta tags and the basics right. But then the actual SEO is just not what it was once thought of as like trying to game something. It's like you can pretty much ignore. I mean, to the high level SEO people, we sound like idiots right now. But for our level of things, you can really just focus on creating good content, partner with the right people, and getting linked to from the right sites in the right way.
Yeah, and email list. You know, I really strongly believe that marketing any business online today, it's more about building the email list, which is really about educating and doing content, you know, that's high value, because that's what you own, is the email list and the audience. And that's what I've really been, that's been my go-to strategies to build Restaurant Engine and build everything else. And that's what I'm really focused on right now, for sure.
Right. That's like the tip of the arrow of permission marketing and where things yeah. are now. Someone gives you your email address. They've given you permission to enter the most valuable space in their online life, which is the inbox. And that's the most valuable piece, not the retargeted ads, not the paid ads. But their email inbox.
Yep.
So that's where we've been thinking a lot and trying to think bigger and be more ambitious in the goals, and then backing out and saying, is that possible? What do we need to do? You know, this goes back to the pricing conversation we always have. So we're thinking hard about pricing and about that bottom tier, and maybe we don't want it there, because you project outward. You say, $250,000 a month, right? That's a $3 million business. You're a blip. The market doesn't notice. So how are you going to get to $250K a month? Is that realistic at the pricing levels and how many customers you need and how long it takes to onboard them? And if it's not, then maybe we should adjust. So all these different types of things that go into thinking through that. And the other thing I've been doing this week is basically following up with people from MicroConf. Because that's where I see most of the value from the conference being. I think maybe that makes sense as a segue to kind of talk about our big takeaways from those few days in Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of like following up with people from MicroConf, I think so. One of my high level takeaways this year, just an overall impression, at least for me personally, is last year MicroConf 2014 was my first time going. And so last year for me, it was all about meeting so many new people. And there were a few friends that I was meeting up with last year. But for the most part, I was most excited about meeting new person after new person after new person. And then going into that year from 2014 to 2015 with like a whole new set of like MicroConf people that I met and kind of keeping tabs on them and keeping touch over the year. And so this year, 2015, for me, it was really all about just catching up with people and friends. Yeah, I met a few really great new people who it was great to meet for the first time. But
yeah, it was fun.
For the most part, like all the dinners and a lot of the conversations that I was seeking out and the conversations I got into were with just kind of catching up with friends. What are you working on right now? And just even people that I talk to on a regular basis over Skype, it was just good to hang out in person, you know. So you and I organized a dinner on Sunday night, which is really great. And that was a good idea for us to do. It was like a last minute thing that we put together on the day before MicroConf. But I think that's a really good thing to do, is like get a planned social, like a planned dinner for that Sunday going into MicroConf. So at least you have a plan once you land. And it also helps to like kind of put a little group together going into the conference. So we had that dinner the first night, and then some of the same people went out to dinner the second night, and then the third night, so Tuesday night, I went out to dinner with a bunch of WordPress bootstrappers, which was good to catch up with all of them as well.
Yeah, the first night was good, and Brian got to see a little bit of my cynical social climbing side. But I think it's important at a conference to kind of position yourself as advantageously as possible. And especially at a conference, especially in Las Vegas, that it's actually more centered around the social aspect. So inviting people to a dinner and being able to tell them that somebody else that's cool or that they admire is coming to dinner, and that you're extending that invitation to them because you think they're as like interesting and cool as the other people. It's a nice way to flatter people in a genuine way, but at the same time, you are positioning yourself at kind of like the crossroads of the social aspect, social elements of the conference, and it's only slightly cynical. You don't really have to be cynical. It's just kind of fun to get people together at dinner. But if you're the one organizing and you're the one inviting people, it helps.
Honestly, I think that having this podcast has been really great for us to build a little bit of a community, or at least be able to reach out to people in this specific space, you know. So that was really cool to see just a lot of people at the conference who are listening in on this podcast. It was great to meet a lot of listeners who I frankly didn't even really know were out there. So that was always fun. But yeah, I mean, I think overall, there's definitely this sense of community, and it's been there for a few years for sure. And I attribute a lot of that to what Rob and Mike have built in everything that they do, but especially with MicroConf, you know. But I think this year, and there's been some talk about how there's just so many returning attendees at MicroConf, and that so many people really know each other at this point. It's great to bring in more new people and meet new people, but it's just awesome to see what people are working on from year to year and see how those projects are progressing. And that's in a big way, like how I know people is like, I know people by what they're working on.
Yeah. The projects.
And yeah. Like, you know, I have a group of people that I know by name and we talk on a regular basis, but then there's a bunch of people, especially guys that I met last year at MicroConf and that I caught up again this year. And it's like, hey, oh, you're the guy with that mobile app, right? Yep. I know you. Yep.
Yeah.
I don't remember your name, but I remember your app, you know? And,
right.
And, that's just always fun to kind of catch up.
Yeah. And it, for me, it was my first year. So I had the same experience that you did, but the previous year. So it was just meeting so many people is just kind of exciting. But I could see how next year seeing the same people again gives it a different feel. You're like catching up and it's a little more fun. It's a little more relaxing. And you're right that there is a magic to what Rob and Mike have done in the community, because it's the most approachable, easygoing conference, and at the same time super, super relevant, super high value, and both of those things at the same time. You know, like confidence is like situational. If you're in a room with a bunch of billionaires and you're not, you don't feel as confident. And MicroConf has this weird way of kind of flattening that out, where even though people are further ahead or further behind, it's this weird camaraderie of everyone kind of being in the same boat. So
yeah.
that kind of goes away and everyone just feels confident in just being themselves and just talking about what they're doing. And you don't have to kind of hide behind like, oh, my thing isn't as big as this other person's business. And there's just very, very, there's the minimal amount of that it can possibly be.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, for example, like the dinner that I went to on Tuesday night with a bunch of WordPress business owners, you know, there are guys at that table doing, you know, multi-million a year. And there are guys with plugins doing a few thousand a month. And guys were just starting things up. And we're all giving and receiving value at that table. It was just a lot of fun. But, you know, you're right. There is a magic to MicroConf and gatherings like this of like-minded individuals, that this camaraderie. For me, I mean, I definitely experienced this firsthand this year for sure. I've been talking a lot about how I'm just trying to figure out what my next business is. I'm in this very big transition period right now, kind of drive myself a little crazy these last few weeks and months. And I'll talk in detail about all this next week, I promise. But the magic that happened for me at MicroConf was it clicked. That thing that I'm going to work on, just being around so many other entrepreneurs, hearing conversations, what people are working on, something gave me that like instant clarification of like, oh, all right, this is the thing that I need to do. And then actually that Wednesday after MicroConf, I was hanging around all day because my wife was coming in that night. And so I basically spent most of that day in the hotel room typing detailed plans about this new thing that I'm starting. And it just flowed out like 2 months worth of confusion and ideas and roads and dead ends and backtracking, all flowed out in a matter of like 6 hours sitting in my hotel room the day after MicroConf. And it couldn't be clearer. It couldn't be, you know, it was just perfect. So I'm just really excited about it. Now it's just a matter of getting home and executing on this stuff.
Right. And that's the environment that does it. It's intangible, but it motivates and energizes you. It's awesome.
Totally. So should we get into some specific takeaways from some of the talks?
Yeah. And it's impossible for us to cover every single talk, or this podcast will be an hour and a half long, and it probably will be anyway. But so anyone that we missed, it's not that we like didn't like their course or something. You know, you can go to microconfrecap.com and read about everyone's. And Kai Davis, a fellow Oregonian here, took great notes, and people sent him slides. So MicroConf Recap will get you a lot of the information on every one of the talks. And we're just going to talk about the highlights that we kind of remember and wanted to point out specifically for one reason or another.
Yep.
Cool. So let's start off. Patrick McKenzie, I mean, there's a reason he's like a legend in MicroConf circles. The guy is just so likable and so smart and so funny.
Yeah.
He's great. And his talk was, I thought, unexpected. I didn't think that's what he would talk about. He's kind of known as like the A/B testing guy and onboarding and kind of engineering business stuff. But he didn't talk about that. He talked about exit, you know, exiting a business and
yeah,
the reasons for doing it. And the process and the nitty-gritty behind it and the stuff that's annoying. And yeah, I thought that was a really interesting talk, especially from someone like that. And you don't hear it. And I have a suspicion that you're going to be hearing more and more of that happening and more liquidity in the market in general for, you know, for these micro self-funded businesses. There's going to be more liquidity in the market. People are going to be able to sell their businesses for that $100,000 to $750,000 range. And it's a much easier process, but you don't really hear much about it. And it's going to become additionally, you know, more and more relevant over the next few years.
Yeah, there was definitely, you know, some chatter running through the conference this year about exits, for sure. And I was definitely resonating with a lot of what Patrick was saying in that talk. So a few specific points really popped out to me as he was talking. One was, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here. I don't know exactly how he put this, but I just jotted a quick note in Trello as I was sitting there. But you know, he was talking about transitioning from one business into the next business, right? And he said something about the importance of optimizing your next business for learning new things. You know, I think what he was getting at there was, his current business, he kind of learned everything that he was going to learn from it, and the next business can't exactly just be like replicate the same thing, but it's got to you know help you grow in some way and learn new things that you could actually use and apply and add value, both as a business but also as your experience as the founder. So that one kind of popped out to me, and then just the other he quoted Peldy Gulazoni from Balsamic, who told Patrick, and again I'm probably paraphrasing a paraphrase at this point, but he said you have to work on something that you love and use that as your competitive advantage. And I think what he was getting at there was, you know, if you go into a market or some kind of space and you're not completely passionate about that particular topic or that audience, that customer base, you might be able to make it work for a while, but you're going to be up against competitors who live and breathe that market and they love it. And they're always going to be at an advantage. So you might as well go after the thing that you're truly passionate about.
And where he is now seems to be like the culmination, right? So
yeah,
it always felt like his talents were not fully utilized in the current businesses. And now all of a sudden you see what he's working on next, and it's very technical in nature, but you know, clever, and it kind of fits right alongside with what he's doing. I mean, Patrick in general has a much higher tolerance for pain than most people. So I don't know how he kept the motivation going when he was making literally 10 times the amount of money that his app was making in 1 week of consulting as compared to a 30-day period of the app, and he just kept at it. And his explanation for why.
Well, he kept at it, but he also talked about how there were weeks and months at a time where he didn't work on it when he should have been working on it. From a business standpoint, you should be, but that's the most challenging thing about this long, slow SaaS ramp of death, right? Is that if you're not completely invested in the topic, in the customer base, in this market, then it's easy to have these periods where, you know, Patrick talked about how he would go off and play video games for weeks at a time, you know, or you know, chase shiny objects and other business, you know, opportunities.
Yeah. So that was cool. That was a different perspective from him, and really looking forward to hearing more about Starfighter, right? That's the name?
Yeah. Yeah. It looks really cool.
Yeah. It's like the most clever recruiting tool ever. It's great.
I don't think I'll have the dev chops to play whatever Starfighter is as a game, but
right, I think
like
that's
really
like
cool,
the point. Like cool, we're gonna weed people out. Yeah, but it's a very cool concept. I hope it works for them. Up next, we're talking about Joanna Wiebe from Copy Hackers, and I mean, she knows her stuff. But it's not just that she knows her stuff when it comes to copy. It's that she explains it so well. Right, there are a lot of great copywriters out there, but she has such a knack for teaching and explaining things for people who don't live and breathe copy all day that she gives out a huge amount of value, and enough of that value comes back to them, or at least I assume so, to make it a great business. And she's just an amazing resource for our community. We need a person talking about copy and teaching us how important it is and how to use it. So her talk was awesome. And there's definitely one clear takeaway. You wrote that out here. What was it, Brian?
Yeah. So the one thing that really popped out to me that she talked about was that every piece of copy has one job. You know, if you're writing an email subject line, the only job that has is to get you to open the email. If you're writing a button text, the only job is to get them to click that button. You know, you don't have to sell your whole app, or you don't have to sell the whole contents of the email in the subject line. You just have to get them to open the email. And then first headline of a landing page, the only role of that is to get them to keep reading and keep scrolling down. And that was a good little tip. But overall, you know, I learned, I think, everything that I really know about copywriting on the web and marketing copy, especially from Joanna, from her eBooks and from her blog, which I've been reading for years. And what I really liked about her talk was that it was very tactical and very action oriented and showed a lot of examples. And I was going into her talk thinking like, you know, I've been reading her stuff for a while. It's probably going to be, you know, a rehash of things that she's written about before, but it was like all new ideas. And it made me think more about certain things, you know, like how she showed these case studies of like even best practices in copywriting can still test and show the unexpected result is actually successful.
Yeah, the other takeaway I took from her, I think the better a copywriter, the more humble, in that they admit upfront that they don't know. And you don't actually know anything, and everything's a test. And one thing that worked for one business is not going to, you can't expect it to work the exact same way for another business. And so it's a kind of a very humble approach to marketing and experimentation and being very prepared to be wrong and to go back to the original. And so that it was just a great talk in general. But that takeaway that each piece of copy has one job, it kind of blew my mind. Because, you know, we're redoing the marketing site now for Cardhook. It seems so daunting. Like, what are you going to write? How much to write? How much detail? How much? But then when you look at a page and you get yourself into that mindset, it's such a powerful kind of hack. Like, okay, in this section, we're going to talk about one feature. And so let's just talk about that feature. What's the goal? What's the job of this section and of this title and of this bullet point? It's just to explain this feature, and that's it. And that's so much more doable than how is this going to fit into the larger flow and all these other things. So it's really, really helpful.
Yeah. So Jason Cohen gave a talk / interview / kind of open Q&A, which I thought was really cool. And he's the perfect guy to just get up there on stage, nothing prepared, and just drop some knowledge.
Yeah. You know, it's like wisdom.
And some experience.
Like another level, right? Yeah. Jason... at every conference you have like people that you look up to and you're like nervous about meeting them. for me, it's Jason Cohen, and I'm like a fanboy. I just think he's just very, very smart and interesting, and the way he's gone about his business is very cool. His writing is really good. I kind of bumped into him by accident when we went out, when we went for drinks that first night. We like hit each other back to back, and I was like, "Oh, I feel," you know, it was like it was the only the one time I was like, "Oh, I feel nervous. This is weird. I know who this person is. They don't know who I am." Yeah, it was like it was the only experience of that. But his talk, right? It was kind of free flowing. The thing that affected me most, and I think it was the one moment in the conference that had really deep emotion, and you can kind of you felt people in the room kind of get emotional listening to it. And it was in response to a question of, look, you've got enough money to never work again. Why do you go to the office every day? What makes you motivated to go to the office? And instead of giving like this fluffy answer of like, I want to make a difference, or I'd be bored, I don't want to be on the beach, he kind of gave a real answer. And one that could only come from that experience. It really affected me because I always pretend like everything's about money and all that, but you have a suspicion deep down that like, okay, once you achieve financial success, if it's really just about money, you're gonna enter this giant dark void and you're not gonna know what to do with yourself. And then you have the potential to go in different directions and chase the wrong things. And so it really resonated with me. And his response was give an example of the difference that his company makes in individual people's lives, people who don't have a college degree, maybe don't even have a high school degree, but they give them opportunities that they normally wouldn't, and they transform their lives. And he kind of just showed a glimpse of how much satisfaction and meaning can be derived from that, that is so much stronger than what money can do. And it kind of opened up a little hope, at least for me, on the other side, to say financial success is one thing, but after achieving it, there's this whole universe of meaning beyond that, and that's really it's really exciting.
Yeah, you're actually building something much bigger than yourself and your current situation, and really impacting other people, whether they're your employees. You know, he talked a lot about how, you know, the people that he works with and the onboarding of employees in WP Engine and kind of, you know, just really got deep into that. It was, you know, yeah, great stuff there. One of the attendee talks that I enjoyed listening to was Einar Volset. He talked about productized services. So obviously I was into that one. I thought he had a lot of really smart ideas to share there. And he's, you know, he's running a successful productized service. He made one good point. And this is kind of a tactical thing as you start to like focus in on a market. And that is pick a service where leads have a web visible sales signal. So, I mean, Jordan, I think you do this really well with Carthook. Obviously, you know, you guys target very specific e-commerce shopping carts. Like you guys only work with a select number. Obviously, it's a growing number, but you can target customers who use BigCommerce or whatever you guys integrate with. You know, so looking for indicators like that, I think Einar's productized services around maintenance for mobile apps. Or
yeah,
like
app aftercare. That's right.
App aftercare, where they kind of improve existing mobile apps. So, you know, I mean, it's a matter of like going to the app store and looking for apps and kind of getting at, you know, connecting with those customers. So, you know, just finding a way to as you're starting to nail down like who is the ideal customer for this. And I'm thinking a lot about this right now as I'm going through this process again. You know, that going through that strategy of the how are you going to reach them and how are you going to target them and then look for that like web visible signal.
Right. And it's like a matter of reverse engineering and then adjusting your marketing so that it's only targeting the right prospects. And his process is awesome. So, right. He will look at who is climbing in the rankings. So, you know, that they're getting a ton of downloads for their app. And then at the same time, he will look at things like, is this a team that does the, is this a studio that knows what they're doing, or is this, you know, a smaller company that launched an app and all of a sudden has a hit on their hands, and that's who's going to need his service. That's who's going to need help in managing this whole process around the mobile apps. So, and he kind of reverse engineered that from a successful clients. And because the productized service is A, productized, and B, sufficiently profitable, that you can take that one-on-one approach and really pick your leads and go after them. His talk was fascinating, and it's a cool business, and he has that like Scandinavian like funny man thing. So yep. he was a very cool guy to meet.
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
Next up, the most polished of the speakers. Yeah, Jesse Meacham from You Need a Budget.
Yeah, Jesse Meacham. I've seen him speak twice now. Once at last MicroConf, and this year. Awesome speaker, super funny, really unique sense of humor, and just well delivered and all around. I really liked his concept of he kind of touched on this a little bit, but it wasn't a big focus, but it really stuck out to me, and that was to take a really strong stance on your topic and then make that like the core message behind your entire brand. And I know that sounds a little fluffy, but
it like, sounds fluffy, but he translated it into success.
Yeah. Like one of the headlines on, like, if you go to the homepage of YNAB.com or youneedabudget.com, it says like, click here to read our mission. Right. And so the whole company is based around this mission. And then you get to that mission page and the headline is, it's not just software, it's a mission. Right. And their mission is this like four rules, methodology for making a smart budget. And these, like their four rules are like, you know, they kind of believe in a certain method that maybe a lot of other quote unquote gurus might disagree with or might have a different take on it. They're like taking a stand, like this is what we believe you should be doing. And we've made software to make that possible. I just like that whole idea of like finding what that thing is that you're going to take a real strong stance on and forming your whole product and your whole message behind that. It's not just about kind of like optimizing keywords to match with search queries. It's about like just taking a stance on something and saying, like inserting yourself into a market and saying, hey, all you guys are like, this market is here. You guys are doing things. We think you should be doing them a different way, a better way. This is why, and here's how to do it.
Yeah, it's planting a flag. It's taking a stand, and that's how you see a business that is as successful as You Need a Budget, and it started off with an Excel sheet. So they sold, right, a one-time purchase of an Excel sheet, and that alone got them, you know, far enough along to then create software. And now they have it's a beautiful business, man. It's awesome. And it's making a huge difference in people's lives. And that's something you can get behind for a long time. And it's all because they went out, especially in the personal finance market. The truth is, in just about any market, people looking for information, they want something definitive. It's better to just take a stand and attract the people that agree with you than to be wishy-washy and kind of be in the middle and hope that you are attracting everyone with that, because we all know that usually ends up attracting fewer people. I mean, he's just funny, man.
Yeah. Yep. It's hilarious when the camera guy was standing there. He's like, wait, hold on, picture.
Right in the middle of the speech. Didn't miss a beat. Awesome. It was very well done. Up next is the man himself, right? Rob Walling. He gave a really interesting talk, didn't hold anything back. And I think it shows how much appreciation and respect people have for Rob that I would not want to share. What he stood up and shared with 200 plus people, I'm not going to share in this podcast. That's like none of their business, because I just respect Rob so much. Just for what he's done and for sharing at the level of detail that he did.
Yeah, and I think he makes a point of uncovering really detailed case studies of what he's working on in his MicroConf talks. And I really respect him for not necessarily sharing, you know, daily revenue number, you know, monthly or weekly revenue numbers throughout the year, but giving those details, but also the more meaningful details and lessons learned in these long form talks to a room full of MicroConf attendees. I think that's really, really solid.
And he shares the struggles in between and then the breakouts and then the struggle and the breakout again, and where he talks about stair stepping. You wrote it down here in our notes. The biggest takeaway I got from the talk was the part about positioning. You don't think that much about it, But then when he matched up what taking a stand and having a clear position in the market, what that did to the company, what that did to the revenue, what that did to like their mindset in what they're doing and what they're going after. Yeah, it was kind of amazing to see how big of an effect it had. And it sounds a little fluffy positioning, but the truth is they took a stand in the market and they took the right one according to their customers and their product. And it flowed through everything. It flowed through attracting new people, retaining people, and revenue going up, and the company kind of gaining this amazing momentum.
I really think that that whole concept of positioning just is really important to fully understand. I think for everyone listening and for everyone who is at MicroConf, what Rob has done with Drip is a prime example of getting positioning right. You know, the way that, you know, Drip is getting into the email marketing space, which is an extremely competitive space to get into as a newcomer right now. I mean, it's been around, email has been around for years. Email marketing has been around for many years. And now even like email marketing automation is pretty crowded now. But still, like the way that he's positioned Drip, it's not competing with MailChimp. It's a step up from MailChimp, and it's not competing with Infusionsoft. It's more accessible than Infusionsoft. So like they've been very intentional about positioning themselves and carving out that little space in between for a certain type of audience, and that's what it's all about. So I think as we're all looking at different businesses to get into or launching a new thing, we're all launching into competition, and it's important to get into something where there are competitors, because if there are no competitors, that's a red flag, right? There's probably a reason for that. But you know, I think there's this tendency to say, oh, there are these competitors, I'm going head to head against this other guy or these three other guys. You know, you can look at it one way, which is, all right, I know that I'm going head to head against these guys, I'm just going to outdo them. I'm going to outspend them. We're going to outdevelop them. We're going to out whatever. But really the question is, all right, I know who my competition is. Now, how am I going to differentiate myself, and how am I going to target slightly different target customers than who they're going after, and why are those customers, what do they specifically need that these competitors are not delivering for them? So yeah, a lot of really strong takeaways in Rob's talk there.
Yeah,
for sure.
It made me think of back to Jason Cohen, back to my fanboydom. I wouldn't want to compete with him in the WordPress managed hosting space, right? There was another guy at the conference who runs Pagely, another managed hosting, and they are crushing it. And they have a different position in the market. It's just for slightly different part of the market, and it's a big ass market, and there's plenty of customers. And if they tried to be just like WP Engine, I don't think it would work out nearly as well as them being Pagely and having that their specific position in the market.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Cool. Exactly. And it's just fun to see Rob doing well, because I don't know, kind of deserves it, man. Guy works hard and provides a lot of value.
Totally.
It'll be really interesting to see what happens with Drip over the next few years.
Yep, for sure. So a couple more here.
Yeah, only
Steli, two more. Steli Efti. That was a really entertaining talk.
It was entertaining. He might have gone a little over the line on the cursing, but he does use it to good effect.
Very doesn't bother me.
Right. Very energetic and captivating.
I almost wish that he was one of the earlier speakers, like on the first day,
just to pump everybody up.
His was like a fire up speech, you know. Yep. But he was one of the last speakers, but it kind of, you know, kind of pumped us up for the after party, I guess.
Yeah.
But, and you and me, our attendee talked right after him. And
right after.
I was a little nervous about following Steli Efti.
Right. And at least you weren't talking about sales the same way I was. Like, fine.
Well, I kind of, but still, we kind of both were, but
yeah,
still,
you were. You know. So Steli talked about sales, right? He runs customer.io. Whoa. Back up. Close.io. Yeah, so sales software. And the biggest takeaway, I mean, I've, you know, heard him speak before and read a lot of stuff from them and from sales in general. The biggest takeaway I took was on the following up. So his thing is, do not stop following up until you get an answer. He talked about a story where he followed up with an investor like 45 times. And that's just ballsy.
Yeah.
But what it made me do is it made me think of my own inbox. it made me think of what happens when I get busy. And he's right. If the person on the other end that's following up with me assumes that I like don't care or don't like them or am annoyed, or they're 95% of the time they are wrong. It's just that I am busy and have other priorities that I have to take care of first. And then when they follow up, I'm almost always grateful, as long as you do it in a nice way and don't make the person feel guilty. And then I think about, I'm like this busy, a tiny bit busy compared to some other really busy people. And so it's even worse for them. And it made me much more willing to just keep following up, because why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. I mean, if it's really a no, they're going to tell you. They're going to say, no, not interested, or whatever nice way they want to do that, or not nice way do they want to do that. Either way, if it's a definite no, they're going to tell you, because they don't want you to keep clogging up their inbox, right? But if it's not a no, then you're right. They're probably busy, and you do need to follow up. And this, I've learned this lesson again and again over the years. This goes back to my days of freelancing. I can't tell you how many times I was like on the fence of like, should I send one more email or not? And then I did, and then I landed a $20,000 project, you know, that definitely would not have been there. And then the same thing happens with Restaurant Engine. We've built in a very solid procedure for, we always follow up next day and then next week and then next week, and we set reminders until the person falls off, you know, or they sign up.
Yeah, no response does not equal rejection.
Exactly.
Right. A no is only a no when someone writes back and says, I'm not interested, stop emailing me. Like that's actually pretty good, because then you don't have to send any more follow-up emails. Anyway, so that was good. And then...
Yeah. Well, one little quote from Stelly popped out to me, and I jotted this down. I don't even really remember the context of what he was saying, but as soon as he said it, I wrote it down because it made an impact. And that was, out-teach your competitors. I think the company or the person who really not only invests in education, but through the sales process, whether it's over email, over the phone, or in your content marketing, or in the pre-sales materials, the ones who out-teach, like educate about the concept and the topic, but also like teach them how to become a customer and take them through the process and what that looks like, just makes the whole process more comfortable for everyone. And it's more effective. And yeah. So I think that's what he was getting at when he said out-teach your competitors.
Yeah, and he was also saying that they don't do paid advertising. They just teach sales, and it attracts the right people. And he's right. A while back, I signed up for Close.io almost entirely because I wanted to be associated with that brand and what they were teaching me. And I just assumed they're teaching me so much. If I use their software, I will continue to learn, and I'll continue to be more likely to be successful. I mean, the only reason we don't use Close.io is because it literally just would not work for our particular process. But I tried to find a way to work with Close.io, and it was because they were just doing an amazing job teaching. It also helps to focus the mind on content marketing, because that term is so broad, and people think they should just create content, when in reality they should focus on their segment of the market and what they need to know and what would help them. And teaching helps focus that. Instead of just creating lists of stuff like the top five things you can do with X, it's like, no, yeah. If you just teach your target market, that's the better way to do content marketing in general.
Exactly. It's not, again, it keeps coming back to this, and it's really on my mind about, it's not about keywords. It's not about word length. It's not about frequency of posts. It's about how well you're teaching your target customers. And that's how you come out with content that resonates and connects with them and makes them more likely to get into your sales funnel.
Yeah, we see examples of it all over the place. So the last one, Heaton Shaw. So he knows his stuff. Everyone knows he knows his stuff with Crazy Egg, with Kissmetrics, with Hello Bar. So his talk... At first, I wanted to dismiss it as not that relevant for myself or for other people in our situation. All right, so he talked a lot about product market fit and a lot about qualitative research and how getting the research right and the product market fit piece of it right can help your business move a lot faster and be a lot more successful. So at first I heard that and was like, that's not really for me. And like, how much research can really do? It's easy for him. He's got the budget to do research. And then as he kept talking, I kind of realized actually that a lot of us can apply this to our business. Maybe we don't have the same budget or don't have the same capability to do research on a larger scale, but to focus on getting the product right for the market at the right time, that is something worth pursuing. It would make your life a lot easier.
Yeah, for sure. You know, that customer research piece, I know the survey that he's been talking about, you know, like surveying your customers has been really effective. I was talking to a few guys in my mastermind group who actually ran that survey with their customers this past week after his talk. And going through some of the results, and they were like truly insightful. One guy's actually making changes in his business based on that.
And what was it again? What was that? What was the key question?
What would you do if this product didn't exist, right?
Right.
Or what would be the alternative? And then,
right,
and then
how, would, like, how make, would you feel if you could no longer use this product?
Right. Yeah. And then and make that like an open-ended response so that you can see what people are typing in, which is you know, just really, really helpful. So I want to call attention to the Rogue Startups podcast. Dave Rodenbaugh, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. He's the co-host of that podcast. He was at MicroConf and he did a MicroConf interview at one of the after parties with Heaton Shah. Brecht Palumbo was on there. A few other guys were on this kind of roundtable talk. Really great conversation. I wish I was around to hear it. I guess they did it late night at one of the after parties. I probably called it quits before they hit record on this thing. But it was just a really, really good conversation with Heaton and Dave and Brecht and a few others. You know, highly suggest checking that out. It kind of gives you a glimpse into what these MicroConf conversations look like, you know, which is really cool.
Nice. I'm going to check that out. I haven't seen that.
Yeah, I was listening to that yesterday. It was a good one.
Nice. So we are a week away. A week has gone by since the conference. And now the challenge is sustaining the energy and motivation that comes out of it and having longer-term impacts in the business based on things that we learned. I kind of want like a mid-year conference.
Totally. You know, that's actually one more takeaway I wanted to mention here. And that's, so, I do the annual Big Snow Tiny Conf with Brad Tunar. He and I organized the ski trip up in Vermont. We've actually been talking with Dave Rodenbaugh and a few other guys who are talking about doing one out west in Colorado. So there's that, and we had a little Twitter conversation going about like doing like a hike conf, a big hike, tiny conf, sometime in the fall, you know. So we're, you know, these conversations about these like mid-year mastermind trips, you know, rent a house, go somewhere cool, and talk with a few other business owners for a couple of days, are popping up, and I really hope a couple more of these actually come together, you know, so because it's just an excuse to get out there, take a trip and get in a room with like-minded folks. And like I said, at the top of this, you know, there's this magic that happens, this inspiration, this creative energy that comes out of talking with people. And yeah, we have our weekly mastermind groups and we've got our friends and advisors and all that, but it's taking a trip and getting out of the norm for a week and really like immersing yourself in this kind of culture for a few days. That just gets the energy going. And it's just a reminder for me, like how much I need to do this more often throughout the year. So definitely looking to get some of these other things together for sure.
Yeah. Same here.
Cool. Well, let's wrap it up for today. As always, you can dig into the backlog of episodes by heading over to bootstrappedweb.com. And if you're enjoying the show, please do head over to iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. And today's episode was sponsored by Less Accounting. You can check out their new autopilot service at lessaccounting.com/autopilot and use coupon code bootstrappedweb to get a free month of the bookkeeping service or 2 free months of the Less Accounting software. So that does it for today.
Very cool. Thank you very much. Hey, Brian, great to talk with you.
Yep. Talk to you soon.
See you.
Later.